I've got one for you. And this is one that I gave like 10 minutes of thought to the other day. And I'm really curious. I'm deathly curious. I think that a lot of people are curious to know what your thoughts on this matter are, Jacqueline. Tell me. I think it was Sigmund Freud who said that there are two real forms of actual validation in this world, and of course those are likes or faves. And I want you to tell me, gun to your head, you can have one, an infinite number of one, hundreds of thousands, millions of one or the other for the rest of your life. Which are you going with, Facebook likes or Twitter faves? Gun to your head, choose right now. You can have millions of one and none of the other.
I thought those were Twitter likes too.
No, they're faves.
That's what they were called. Are called faves?
They're faves.
Okay. Holy shit.
There's retweets, which that's a whole other ball game. That's a yarn that we'll have to follow another time. But right here, gun to your head, likes or faves.
Okay. Let me tell you what I'm rationalizing in my head right now.
Okay.
Is that a Twitter fave? You can fave something ironically.
Uh-huh.
That's as true. A lot of people do.
Sure, as one is wont to do. You can't Facebook like something ironically. Now, I will say that the inclusion a couple years ago of the different Facebook emojis
right.
changes the scenario a
I
bit.
I don't think that a lot of people Facebook like things or Facebook anything ironically. Mm. In the sense that the people that are on Facebook, irony is not something that they do well
uh-huh.
while on a computer.
Yeah, right.
Like it doesn't interpret, it doesn't translate well with a lot of the Facebook crowd. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as possible here. As much.
Yeah.
Now, obviously.
I will say, I hear you,
uh-huh.
and I will say that you're not wrong.
Yeah.
I will say there is a type of person that likes things on Facebook, ironically.
Yeah, but there's so few of you.
Uh-huh.
You're one of those people. and there's very few of you left on Facebook.
Those people have been brain poisoned by Twitter.
Basically, and they're no longer on Facebook. Uh-huh. If they are, there's just very few of you left.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still a basic bitch in yeah. so many ways.
Sure.
So I'm going to have to say I live for the Facebook like.
Okay.
I just live and die by it. Let me tell you why.
That serotonin rush of all yeah. the other basic bitches.
Yeah, and let me tell you why. Because
flowing straight to your brain and that your bloodstream filling with joy.
Exactly. That is part of it. And also, too, because I feel like a Facebook like is more of a gauge of how I'm doing in my real everyday life. Because the people who are my Facebook friends, on the whole,
uh-huh.
are the people I'm interacting with in my real everyday life.
So you're saying that Piss Pig Granddad isn't like your peer in your community? Is that
exactly. I would say there's probably 5 of my 500 Twitter followers that are in my everyday life.
Huh.
Whereas in my Facebook, of my 1,500 Facebook friends.
Oh, that 800. Now you're just rubbing my nose in the dirt.
800 of them are in my everyday life.
Okay, sure, sure.
So
you're going.
I'm going with Facebook like. Yeah.
I would have to tell you, and I'm sure this is no surprise, that I would take faves.
Oh.
I would take 10,000 faves over a million likes.
Easy. Oh, I know you would.
Easy.
Totally.
Honestly, there's probably. A certain, you could come up with a certain concoction of 10 people to like one tweet that I would settle for over, delete Facebook immediately. If I could get like...
You'd die a happy man.
Yeah. If I could get drilled to favorite one of my tweets, I would retire from social media forever. I guess.
Welcome to Palimony Podcast.
Yeah, that seems like a good place to start. Palimony Podcast.
I'm Jacqueline.
And I am Justin. I guess, why don't you tell us what this is, what we're doing here, why you think we're doing it, who we are, and where we're going.
So we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and we have podcast microphones, so we thought, why the hell not?
Yeah,
the party started.
We were those assholes that did the thing where you say, oh, I like to listen to podcasts, so I could easily do that too. And so, yeah, what did we do? We kept them in a closet for 4 months.
Yeah, since Christmas, we've had them in the closet. And we're pulling them out now because we're bored.
Yeah.
And so here we go, folks.
Going to bestow just mountains of
fresh, white, hot, dakey knowledge on all of you.
Oh, you three people who are listening to this are in for a treat.
A real treat. So anyway, yeah, we decided to start a podcast. We are a married couple of attorneys living in small town Nebraska. But I'm sure if you're listening to this in episode one, you already know that about us. We decided on Palimony as the name for our podcast, as a play on our legal roots.
We're nerds.
Which we'll get into, I'm sure. So Justin, introduce yourself. Tell us about who you are.
Sure. I am Justin Dakey. I am, as you said, an attorney living in Alma, Nebraska. Practicing in Oxford, Nebraska. I'm a criminal lawyer.
Means he practices criminal law. He is not a criminal.
So we say. I don't know. I am 33 years old. I am, as you can probably tell, a white male. And I am as white bread, boring ass Nebraskan as they possibly get. So that's me. How about you? Who are you, Jacqueline?
I am a 31-year-old female married to Justin, who you just heard from. I was born and raised in Texas, so I'm not a Midwesterner, but I have been transplanted here. Justin and I met in law school in Topeka, Kansas at Washburn University School of Law, and things just took off from there. So even though we're both attorneys, we've decided this is not a legal podcast. This is more a podcast about our hot takes on life and love and everything in between, current events, what's going on around us locally, what's going on around us globally, what's going on around us in the state of Nebraska. We've also gotten requests and suggestions from friends and family about things we should talk about. We also have a few guests that we want to bring on the show here to talk with us. So we've got a lot of fun things planned, and we're hopeful to keep this thing rolling. We just hope we don't run out of steam.
Yeah. Like most podcasts, I think the initial fear is always we're going to do two episodes, realize it's too much work, and then give up. But if that happens, I suppose that happens. But here we are. I guess, initially I thought, we probably need to discuss kind of, what we're doing. So you have a reason to determine whether or not you want to listen to us. The reality, at least for me, is I don't know what we're doing. Most of the podcasts I listen to are pretty, I guess you could say, freewheeling or anti-concept or a lot of improvisation. So that's kind of, what I know or kind of what I'm influenced by. I don't know Jacqueline's thoughts, but I mean, thematically, I think that we're going to probably cover a lot of different stuff, as you said.
Totally. I think at the end of the day, the biggest takeaway will be what both of our malpractice insurers have told us to say is that nothing we say on this podcast should be construed as legal advice. So thanks for playing.
Yeah, sure. So I guess anyway, that, I'm sure we'll get into a lot more of our own personal biographies and backgrounds and what stuff down the road. I guess for today's episode, I thought we could talk a little bit about life in a global pandemic. So I guess, Jacqueline, tell me, how are you doing?
Hanging in there. I think I've had some days of utter insanity and other days of clarity, but for the most part, I think the best way to describe how I'm coping with things is just that I'm hanging in there. How about you?
I guess I'll preface this by saying that I know that people are dying, and I know that the situation is very serious and not to be taken lightly. However, I will say that I am absolutely thriving right now. I think that I was made for the quarantine lifestyle, let me tell you. I'm just living my best life, going on a lot of walks with the dogs. Not being at work a whole lot seems pretty nice. Not having the pressure to be at any place at any given time, or having to be around any people. Quarantine is like an introvert's just dream. Like, it is dreamy. Taking a lot of naps. Doing a lot of self-care. Mm-hmm. So besides the fact that people are drowning in their own fluid, their lungs are filling up with fluid, and people are having to be hospitalized and dying and just terrible suffering. Personally, I think it's been all right.
So besides the naps and the walks and all the self-care you're doing, what is work like for you right now during the pandemic?
Work has been very slow. So like we said, I'm a lawyer, mostly doing criminal and juvenile law, but pretty much 90% of my practice is litigation in some form or fashion. And basically the courts have kicked all of our hearings out 2 to 3 months. And there was a first round of instances where we were told, nothing was going to happen until the middle of May. That's now become basically late June or July. So if I'm not having court, I'm really not having to do a lot of work preparing for court, and that's pretty much all that I do. And so it's been very slow, but it's been okay. I haven't had to go to work for like the last 3 Fridays, which has been, I'm built for 3-day weekends, but I'm getting by. My bills are getting paid. My secretary's getting paid. We've got money. We're not suffering right now. Who knows if this keeps up for months and months, what that's going to be like. But overall, it's okay. How about yourself?
Well, for the most part, I'm still going to work every day. I feel like work has strangely picked up since everyone started social distancing, and I think that may just be the difference in the types of law that we practice.
Yeah.
So I primarily have a litigation practice as well, but I also do a lot of transactional work, such as real estate deals, tax preparation, contracts, probates, wills, estate planning, and all that good stuff. So I think that now that everyone else may be slowing down, they're taking time to maybe take care of some of their legal stuff in the meantime. So it's been interesting that my work has actually probably picked up a little bit, with the exception of actual court appearances.
Yeah, you do a lot of estate planning, right?
I do.
I ask that for the edification more of, I know what you do, but for the listeners' edification, you do a lot of estate planning.
Yeah.
Have you noticed an increase of people coming in basically saying, I need to get my affairs in order in case me or, a member of my family were to get sick?
Yeah, I'd say I've probably seen about a 50% increase in the number of wills I would do in any given week.
Wow. Wow.
Wills and powers of attorney. Powers of attorney have been, like a medical power of attorney has been and living wills have been the highest number of requests I've received, really since talk of all this started.
Sure.
Mid-February to really the first weeks of March.
I didn't realize it kicked up that much. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Certainly makes sense, but that's...
I'm probably cranking out basic estate plans with powers of attorney. That whole, my whole kind of basic estate planning suite.
Uh-huh.
3 to 4 a day right now.
Huh. Jeez. Yeah. It's hilarious to think that you've just been, and I know that you've, you know, in our personal conversations, you've just been saying how crazy busy you've been. I've literally been sitting around twiddling my thumbs. Like me and my secretary just cut it up for a couple hours a day,
uh-huh.
do a lot of time scrolling Twitter and, you know, looking at the Husker board and, you know, just fucking around. And it's interesting that due to kind of like the differences in what we do.
Yeah. Also, it's the height of tax season when all this started.
Sure.
And I am a tax preparer. So that didn't help things.
Yeah.
Because as the pressure started at the very beginning, people were rushing in to get their taxes done. And then as things lessened and then they extended the tax deadlines, that just means now I'm doing taxes for more months. We've just spread it out a little bit. And also the stimulus checks that people have been getting.
Yeah, my Trump money. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Getting,
what am I getting that, by the way?
I don't know.
What do I get? You are my tax preparer, correct?
I am.
Tell me, Miss Jacqueline, when the fuck are you giving me my Trump money?
I have no control over your Trump money. Tax preparers.
How many people have asked you when they're getting their Trump money?
I have about 200 to 300 tax clients. I prepare about 200 to 300 tax returns every year.
Sure.
It doesn't necessarily mean I have 200, 300 separate clients because many of them have multiple returns for different entities they may
businesses
have or whatever.
And
right. And I would say I've probably fielded between the payment protection payroll protection loan
mm-hmm.
questions.
Yeah.
And
it's a good program.
And the stimulus check questions.
Uh-huh.
I've probably talked to 60% of my tax clients again.
So you're talking like 150 people at least.
Yeah,
right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That have called just to say, what do you know? When will it come? Do I need to give you my direct deposit information?
Uh-huh.
And
we're recording this. So we're recording this on the 24th of April, Nebraska's favorite holiday, Arbor Day.
Plant a tree.
It is. Yeah. I planted a forest of redwoods in my backyard this morning, but
in between his naps and self-care.
So yeah. So we're, you know, here on the 24th of April, we're like a month and a half into basically the crisis that as we've known it here in the United States, correct?
Correct.
So in that time, our federal government has adopted some policies basically to stimulate the economy due to like the unprecedented, basically unprecedented steps we've had, you know, the government's had to take to kind of protect public health. Adopted these policies. Some people have got some money coming, and in that month and a half, you've been contacted by like 160 people and harassed about when you're going to give them their fucking money.
Yeah, and I hate to call it harassing because I get it. Essentially, it's confusing. And who would I call if I was a regular Joe?
It's your job. Yeah. I joke, obviously. Yeah. It's your job.
But the thing is like, it's not like we've received any guidance when they passed all this,
yeah,
to help people navigate it
sure.
or figure it out. So sure. I am literally reading the same articles you're reading after Googling them to try to help you do this figure it out.
There haven't been any CLEs offered on the program that came out 3 weeks ago, right?
No.
So, I mean, like, I guess what I think that you're trying to say is you're doing the best that you can.
I am. And I want to get everyone their stimulus money as soon as possible. I want to make sure that I don't hinder that process. But I literally am shooting from the hip, folks. Shooting from the hip on the payroll protection loans from the Small Business Administration and your stimulus checks due to COVID-19. So take that with a grain of salt.
Well, I think that you really kind of tipped your hat to a secret that not of a lot of people's lawyers will tell them, but half the time we're just Googling the shit too.
Yeah. And maybe because of our education and a little bit of extra training we've had, we can link you to a few more resources to help put it together and make a bigger picture work or make sense. But yeah, Google's a good place to start for everybody. So speaking of the coronavirus, Justin, and kind of how it's affected us and our work, how has it affected, how do you think it's affected our kiddos?
I think it's affected them a lot of different ways. I think probably to start, we probably better, I guess, talk about the situation with our kids. Mm-hmm. So, I'm 33, you're 31. We have three children, ages 18, 18, and 15. And to you, listener, who may or may not know us, that seems a little crazy, right? Well, our situation basically is that we are we did foster care, and we have three foster sons, all teenage males. So we've one of them is a freshman in college, just finished up his freshman year in college. The other is a senior in high school and a sophomore in high school. So we have the sophomore and senior in our home at this time. They have basically not left the home in, 2 months? Almost 2 months. A month and a half.
Yeah, a month and a half at this point. In fact, we went and drove around today just to get some takeout lunch. And I made the kids kind of pile up with us and go. And I think Andy, our youngest, said, like, wow, I don't think I've been outside and in the car in 6 weeks. And yeah. We were like, yeah, that's probably the case.
He hadn't gone anywhere in like a month and a half, like legitimately. So I guess to answer your question a bit, I think that they're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously the first thing that everybody wants to talk about with the kids is the education. Here in Alma Public Schools, the kids are basically doing distance learning. They are given assignments and expected to complete them and submit them online.
Mm-hmm. We have one, not going to name any names, we have one child who does this swimmingly and one who struggles, to say the least.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously that's less than ideal. I mean, it's less than ideal that kids have to, you know, they're losing basically 2 months of in-person schooling. I don't think it's also the end of the world, my personal belief. I'm pleased with the efforts that the schools took early on to switch out to the online learning, to basically call off school. I don't know, when did they call off school? It's like the middle of March, right?
Yeah, it was like March 16th, I think, here in Alma was the last day. It was like a Tuesday, I think.
Sure.
And so yeah, that's the kids have been home all day since then. But you and I have both still, for the most part, been going to work. So it's been interesting to kind of have them home all day with us leaving the home. But that part's been interesting. And like I said, one self-manages pretty well about getting his schoolwork done a little bit every day and kind of knocking it out before he gets on the Xbox or whatever he does all day. I don't even know. And the other one,
he's playing MMOs on his Xbox, which is interesting. And I'm sure at some point in the future we'll have a conversation. But Andy and I had a real bonding moment talking about his rating the other day. But no, he's
speaking of Andrew. Andrew is the one that has completely gone nocturnal at this point. He is meeting his friends for raids on the Xbox. Like electronically they meet or something, they like FaceTime each other and then
they play games together,
get on the Xbox together in their own home so that they can talk and like strategize. I don't know anything about the Xbox, but anyway, so Andy's gone completely nocturnal and he pretty much sleeps until supper time most nights. We'll see him emerge from the basement when I holler that supper is done, and that's about it. He's up the rest of the night and then sleeps throughout the day.
It's like been hilarious. I get up to work out at like 5:36 and he's up shouting at his teammates about stuff, video game shit, as I'm getting up. And, you know, and obviously we could check that. I mean, I guess let me ask you, do you feel like we should check that, Jacqueline?
You know, I haven't. I think probably it's not the best, like, habit for the boys to have been able to self-manage their day as much as we've let them. You know, I don't cook them breakfast. I don't cook them lunch. Like, they're on their own for that. And then when we get home, we have, I cook, we, one of us cooks supper. Or we get supper and we sometimes eat together. Sometimes they go back to the basement. It just kind of depends. So I don't think that those are necessarily great habits we've formed for the most part. But that being said, we're all doing what we can to get through the damn day at this point. And I think right now the boys are, for the most part, doing okay and able to cope with most everything that's happening around them and understand it. So long as they do have still kind of some autonomy over what they can do during the day and, and with their time.
I'm going to go off script a little bit here. I'm going to get just throw a wild curveball at you, but this this is something that I think about a lot personally. I don't think you and I have ever discussed it, but like, do you feel like the fact that basically we're 13 years older, or you're 13 years older, I'm a couple years older than our two oldest, do you feel like the fact that that age difference really isn't very significant affects how you go about parenting the kids?
I definitely think so.
Yeah.
One maybe the biggest premise when you were saying that I was thinking of is not even necessarily because of the age difference, but because of the situation that we had them come into our homes at such a late age. They were teenagers when they moved in, and they're, you know, staying with us until they become adults and go on with their lives. I think maybe the biggest part of that is that I completely forgot what I was going to say, but the biggest part of that is that they
that they came in with like formed ideas and habits, and you know, they're teenagers at that point. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
No, I think what I was getting at was, like, given our situation, I think there's a lot less pressure for us as parents in the parental role for our kiddos. Here we go. Now I'm rolling.
God, I'm cooking with fire.
The wheels are spinning. So yeah, I think the thing is like, there's a lot less pressure for us to feel like, oh God, it's the end of the world if, you know, we don't instill structure in these kids immediately, and we don't have routine for them, and we don't you know, do these things to make them turn out to be the best people they can be. Like, we haven't had them from day one. So like, there's so much of that that's already out of our control that I think that pressure aspect to a lot of parents and a lot of parents are feeling right now probably just isn't there for us.
Yeah. No, and I think that we'll go into that. I will admit that I also feel that way. I guess I kind of think of it as a cop out or a coping mechanism that foster parents sometimes set up for themselves. But I think that at some point we're gonna do a whole episode on foster care. But I guess what I was getting at with my question, I think,
wait, before you go into that, I think the part of the pressure that I'm talking about is that I use that also as like a way to be a lazy parent.
Yeah.
It's a total cop out. And I think I use it as a justification for being somewhat of a lazy parent. But at the end of the day, I also think that generationally speaking, and how to tie this back into our age differences, is that generationally speaking, having teenagers and being young and 30 is a different dichotomy and relationship between your kid and the world and yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that with us particularly, I feel like it's an advantage for us with our boys because I feel like we are able to relate to them on so many ways. That being said, they make me feel old almost every day.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I was saying is that, how I think of it, I think of this all the time. It's just that, I relate to these kids very strongly, and a part of it is probably just an unwillingness to admit that I'm getting older. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, me and Andy bonded over raiding all night. And like, yeah. So we, like, it was like, I came down there one, it was like a week ago, Saturday at like 8 o'clock in the morning, went downstairs and he was playing. And so I sat and watched him play and watched him do things on the Xbox that basically I was doing for all night long on the computer a decade ago.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, I guess to me, like it's hard to be like, it's really hard for me. I feel like a hypocrite to be like, don't do this thing that I was doing just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And like, and so like, that's like, you know, like it's just, and we're way off topic now, but I just like, I guess to me, I am constantly being like, God, I can't talk to these kids about being mature or like about not wearing silly clothes and shit.
Or making good decisions and having good judgment.
I'm going around with wearing fucking wolf shirts and everything else, I can't talk to Andy about his dumb Daffy Duck shirt if I'm doing the same thing.
Daffy Duck shirt.
we're all children is what I'm saying, and we'll never grow old and we'll never die.
Yeah. So I think that to maybe put a bow on the effect it's having on our kids, I'd like to talk about we covered the education and maybe the laziness or routines or habits we've formed since this has started that are maybe less than healthy. But how do you think that it's affecting our kids, like socially or developmentally?
Yeah. And I know that you and I talked about this off mic, but like, I care. I mean, I am not worried basically at all about missing a couple months of school. You know, like kids are in K-12 for 13 years.
I trust that our educators, our local educators here in Alma, like know our kids well enough to know how to bridge that gap when they go back to school, whenever that may be.
They're doing what they can. We're surviving an unprecedented global pandemic. That's what we're doing. But as far as the social aspect, I do, I worry about it. And I guess this, like going back to my earlier question, like, I remember being 18, like, you know, like it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, I'm sure some of my buddies might, you know, may or may not listen. So I guess, I don't know. They're probably not going to be at this point in the cast if they're still listening. But like I remember being 18, like we ran around like hell. Right. And we were constant. Like there wasn't a single day when I was 18 years old that I wasn't hanging out with my friends. It just didn't every single day. Like it just, I don't know. And of course I was trying to avoid my parents and have a bad attitude or go into sports practice or whatever. There wasn't a single day of my week that I wasn't socializing.
Yeah.
And our kids haven't seen any of their friends.
Yeah.
In like what? A month and a half.
Like I said, yeah, 6 weeks almost, or maybe a little over. I don't know. Time is barely even relative anymore. But no, I agree totally. And I think that that's the biggest concern for me with regard to them in this is that Michael, particularly our senior, I worry a lot about him because senior year is like milestone after milestone and kind of memorable thing and recognition for leadership during high school and school years, you know, and leadership in athletics and in academics.
All the honors nights, the sports nights.
Yeah, prom, like, your last prom all that stuff that has been either postponed or at this point is just still uncertain or canceled.
Yeah.
Flat out canceled.
So like, and obviously to no one's fault.
Right.
You know, I guess I'll put myself on the record. I think that Alma Public Schools has handled everything the way that I would want them to handle it. Right. I think that I would much rather have some uncertainty about when this stuff is going to occur or if it even occurs than for one person in my community, even if it be it probably would be an elderly person get sick and die. Right.
Yeah, totally.
So,
and I even think our kids are like fine with it. Yeah. I think at this point, I don't think it's really affected them a whole lot to miss those kinds of things.
Well, and what did Michael basically say today? He just said like he just wishes they'd send him his diploma in the mail and that he could basically move on with it.
Yeah, kind of just pack this part up and move on with his next journey. Because the uncertainty and the rescheduling of everything and then keep pushing it out and stuff, I think is maybe a little harder on him.
Yeah.
Than just saying, all right, we're done. We're not doing any of it. And everyone have a good life.
Well, and like, I guess I put myself at that age. like, I was really ready to be done too.
Yeah.
And like, I guess I was like, you know, I guess if you know me, I'm kind of an anti-authoritarian person. Like, I just, or, you know, and like, I don't really make much out of ceremony for ceremony's sake. And so, like, I didn't want to go to my high school graduation. I didn't go to my college graduation. I did go to law school graduation, and, you know, because that basically, because that's kind of a different beast. I was there with my, you know, there celebrating with my friends more than anything else. But like, I get it. I get being 18 and just being like, I'm done. Like, yeah. give me the piece of paper. I'm done.
And I think you and I probably have a little different take on that, in the sense that I was like Susie high school, trying to do whatever it could to savor those last moments of high school and, you know, make them as picturesque as possible, especially in those final days of my senior year. You know, the athletic banquet and the UIL honors banquet and all these things. I got a new outfit for each of them, and I got my nails done for each of them.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, they were huge deals. And it being my senior year, it was just like, yeah, this, you know, this is the last one.
And some of that, I would say, is probably cultural too, because I, yeah, just things, you know, things that we've seen talked about, like Texas high school extracurricular activities particularly. And you were from a small town, right?
Like, yeah, it's about twice the size of Alma, but that's still relatively a small town. We had under 2,500 people.
Yeah, like, I mean, how many people were in your graduating class?
36, but we were one of the smaller classes.
Sure, yeah. Sure. So, like, you're under 40 in your class, but, like, the way that you guys treated, like, all of your, like, just, like, I guess your community support for all of your extracurriculars was just kind of through the roof. And I've seen the same thing with your cousin's sports.
Justin, that's because Honey Grove Lady Warrior basketball was renowned.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Uh-huh. Renowned in the area for being the absolute ultimate in display of athleticism and poise.
I'm sure it has nothing to do with more of a, like, a local culture of
hush,
supporting Johnny football, which is kind of how I've always interpreted it. But
I'm sorry, the cat just crashed into our podcasting mic, so Justin needs to regroup for a moment. Yeah, so no, I would agree with that. Like, totally that it could be some cultural stuff, but I definitely would have had serious FOMO if this was happening to me in my senior year.
If you didn't get to wear that big bonnet thing to your prom, you would have cried and cried tears, right?
Justin, it was a mum and it's the homecoming, okay?
Okay.
Oh, God.
Dear listener, I challenge you. We're going to go a sidebar here. I challenge you to get on Google right now and just Google Texas high school homecoming mum.
M-U-M.
And just feast your eyes on how creepy and weird this strange ass tradition is.
Tradition.
It's
honor.
Like, it's like some like 15-year-old Southern belle needs to get decked out in the gigantic flower that also hangs to the ground for some reason.
Just Google it. His take on it's super bad, and he's describing it all wrong. Okay. But anyway, mums are a big deal. But that was in the fall, so this wouldn't be affecting it at all. So yeah. To bring this back in here.
Let's do that. We're talking about coronavirus,
I think socially,
right?
Too. Socially, too, with our kiddos, I think that they may have some social impediments, given their trauma history and kind of the situation they've been in. And also being, you know, later transplants into the Alma community as high schoolers and as high school students. So I think given those situations, I'm just worried about them socially a lot more, because this time missing out on friends, even if it is just friends that they're exposed to in class and friends that they're exposed to, you know, on the track team or on the track bus, I feel like may set them back a little bit socially speaking or developmentally speaking. But that being said, they have at their fingertips, like, exponentially more outlets for connection with their friends, even if they aren't seeing them every day.
Yeah. I mean, even from, you know, when we were growing up in the mid-aughts, right?
MySpace, baby.
It was, yeah, I guess you were, like, yeah, you were an 06 grad, so you were really that first generation of MySpace. I, you know, I guess coming up in high school, at their age in high school, for me it was like the MSN Messenger era, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just that. But, like, so we had some of that, but, like, these kids are in constant contact with all of their – not even just like their close fan group, but like just like pretty much everybody in the school, pretty much.
Yeah, or even like the Xbox raids Andy's doing is with kids from like local towns and stuff, to other towns around.
Well, I mean, all over the country. I mean, that too, anyway, you know, they're able to socialize in ways that weren't available to us even as children, and certainly weren't available to our parents or our parents' parents. And so, I guess.
I think that's what's keeping them holding on.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they are able to maintain so much of their normalcy by being able to still just talk to their friends and goof off with them via Snapchat or whatever the heck it is, TikTok or whatever it is today.
Yeah, they're making the best
of it. And I just sounded super old saying that.
Uh-huh.
So, Justin, speaking of social media, what social media accounts do you have?
I guess I have a Twitter account, certainly. I have Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat that I don't really use. So that's pretty much my online presence.
What's your favorite?
Oh, as we discussed in our intro, I am a Twitter man. A couple days ago, I got a notice from Twitter that it was my like 11th. Year anniversary on Twitter, you know, so like 11 years just toiling in the content mines and the deepest recesses of weird Twitter. And yeah, I mean, like, I guess, you know, you look at the statistic use of social media, and to me, like, you know, see, like, you know, most people don't even know what Twitter is. Blows my mind, because I've spent literally like thousands of hours of my life, which I could otherwise be doing useful and, you know, beneficial things for society, I've been wasting away on goddamn phone or computer. How about yourself?
I think I just have the same ones. I have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
Grindr?
I don't have Grindr. I don't have Grindr or Tinder. Sorry, honey. I'm not planning on leaving you anytime soon.
TikTok.
I did. No, there's Facebook
dating now, Jacqueline.
Yeah, I'm not going to Facebook date around here. But anyway. I was going to say, the other day, I got the strongest urge to download TikTok. Because I just thought, like, oh, we could be a cute family that does these dances and records them and these challenges. And I really wanted to do the one by the weekend, Blinding Lights, with the fun dance with the kids. And then I was like, no, I really don't need another distraction right now. So I refrained from downloading it, and I'm very proud of myself for doing so. But no, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. And I'm getting better at Twitter. I'm enjoying it a lot more. I think the key to getting good at Twitter and enjoying it and liking your time on Twitter is carefully curating who you follow and who you allow to follow you. So that what you see is what you want to see and what you want to know and who you want to interact with, whether that be for irony's sake or for funny or for whatever. So I think once I finally got the number of people I followed up, I was able to, or I'm now enjoying Twitter a lot more.
I imagine it would be hard to live a life with me and not also be just destroying your brain every day, turning your brain to Swiss cheese on that platform. I guess we've been talking a little bit about, you know, our life in dealing with coronavirus, and I guess kind of segueing from social media, I guess I've been seeing just really, really top notch posting, just really excellent content on all platforms, but particularly the mother of all platforms, Facebook, since basically, you know, the weeks preceding, the weeks leading up to this thing until basically today, right? So I guess, like, tell me a little bit, like, what things have you been seeing, and, like, you know, how is it making you feel?
Yeah. I've seen a lot. I've seen, I think, the gamut, which I think we all have. Facebook and Twitter and Instagram friends who are posting things about how it's all a hoax, like the Clintons somehow made coronavirus and are spreading it because they're pissed about the 2016 election. I've seen those kind, all the way to the kind of like, if you don't put your mask on, I'm going to come tie one on your head if I see you out and about kind of folks.
Yeah.
So I've seen the whole gamut, and it's been interesting. But I think for me personally, how I feel about it is that I've had to actually step back a little bit from a lot of my social media use since this has started, because it's caused insane anxiety to me to be inundated with the numbers and the access to numbers and the theories on on the severity of it and who's affected by it and the people who describe their symptoms and stuff like that. Sure. So I've had to kind of like even scale back my social media use since it started, which probably has been a really good thing for me anyway. But
well, I think, I mean, maybe we can cut this if you're not comfortable, but like there was a period of time, I don't know, about several weeks ago, but like when things were just starting to heat up, really here in the state, but like just the Omaha area, where there were several nights where basically you just laid in bed reading tweets and spiraling, right?
Oh, like, yeah. And I got shingles because of it. Yeah. Like, I stressed myself out to the point of having an immunoresponse to this, thus making myself more susceptible to getting it and having a negative effect from it. So, like, I created my own monster with regard to it not very long ago.
Yeah. And I remember, I mean, I had to go to court one morning Don, one of the local judge's bailiffs, asked me, how we were handling, kind of given things were just starting to get crazy. I think this was like early mid-March. And I said, I'm doing okay. Jacqueline seems to be really worried. But I think that you've got some health reasons why you should be worried. I mean, nobody wants to get sick, but we know very little about this virus, right? But what we do know is that there are certain people with certain more, pre-existing conditions that,
I believe they call them comorbidities.
Yeah, comorbidities. That's it.
Which,
that's a good word.
Morbidity means you're dying.
All right, we got morbidity in. We just got to get what? We got to get balkanized, and we've got to get quarantine in. I mean, we probably said quarantine. I just said balkanized. We'll go into the balkanization conversation later. But no, like, we got three catchwords for the day or local time. There's certain people with certain comorbidities.
Which I have.
Which, that that you have, that make it so like, hey, let's do everything we can to not get this thing, right? I guess, like, to circle it back, like, I noticed a hilarious kind of track of kind of like a progress from it's a hoax to everybody is making more of this than what it should be, to now we're just killing the, think of the economy, woe is the economy, to basically being like, now I think the conversation has turned into like, it's a personal liberty type thing. Like these directed health measures that we're under are like, like an assault on someone's First Amendment rights or something like that. And it's just become like, there's just been some grade A posting, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's what's become apparent is that we don't know much about this virus. I don't know shit. I'm not a scientist. But like, I guess what I know is that I don't want to get sick. I definitely don't want you to get sick, or the kids to get sick, or my grandparents to get sick, or your listener, your grandparents to get sick, or you, or your kids. And so, like, I guess at the end of the day, So I have a business. I'm a business owner. My business is hurting. I'm not going to lie. But I'd much rather that you be alive. I'd much rather that I be alive. And also like not hospitalized.
Right.
Like I, or even just like, just sick.
Yeah.
You know, reading the people who had the symptoms, then they didn't even have to go to the hospital. They're just like, it was a flu that didn't go away for 2 weeks. Like, who the hell wants that?
Yeah, no one. And I'm willing to, you know, maybe wear a mask when I go in Hoagland's, our local supermarket, or wash my hands a little bit more, or limit the days that I take appointments, or limiting, you know, in-person appointments altogether for the most part, you know, in order to avoid that for me and my friends and my family and my community members.
And there will come a time that, you know, we'll open, you know, I know Governor Ricketts just today announced he's going to start to ease back directed health measures a week from today, you know, or on the 4th of May, whenever that is. And so there's going to be a time where we're going to start opening the economy back up. I'm going to venture that that's going to be deemed too soon. And I'm going to venture it's because obviously people's businesses are hurting and we want to get back to business. I hope on hope that time tells that we did the right thing and this wasn't a stupid mistake. I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah. I know, south of us in Kansas, they've maybe fought back a little harder than I've seen here in Nebraska with regard to some of the directed health measures and like executive orders that have been sent out by the governor. And it was funny because I was scrolling Instagram last night and they had like a rally in Topeka where my mom still lives and where we went to law school, and which is the capital of Kansas. And a guy had a funny sign that just had me rolling because to me it's even out of context for this situation, but it was Socialist Governor Kelly is a dictator that rules like Putin.
Oh, God.
And I just was like, there are so many things about this sign and this guy carrying it around to protest directed health measures that I don't even know where to start. But I was just like laughing at 3 a.m. this morning reading it while I was scrolling
listener,
through my
listener,
Instagram.
Listener, 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 listener. Jacqueline just fucking triggered a deep, deep seating rage within my heart. Okay. So you'll find out about this.
Unleashed the beast.
If
guys.
We record any fucking conversations going forward, I'm sure you'll find out about this. People who know me know that just kind of generally, since like I was a fairly young child, I've been a bit of a Russophile. And I especially, you know, basically from the time of about Peter the Great forward, I read a lot of Russian history. I know a lot about the Soviet era, Russia. It's just kind of a historical...
Side note, folks, this is why he's the best Jeopardy partner in the world.
Anyway, I see your goddamn memes, and I see your goddamn protest signs about modern-day Russia and linking it to communism. I see it from both sides of the political spectrum, which is hilarious. Actually, the Democrats may literally do it more than the Republicans, and they do it, I think, in obvious bad faith. But, like, Vladimir Putin could be literally the farthest thing from a socialist that exists on... I mean, maybe not quite, like, a Bolsonaro or... Who's the fucking guy in Poland? But like basically modern day Russia is a more or less a crypto fascist like corporate state like authoritarian regime.
Yeah.
Like it's not like modern Vladimir Putin is not fucking Stalin. Like
no.
That's like
and modern day Russia is not Stalinist era Russia.
Like it's incredible to me how like that lady who or man or whoever made that fucking
it was a gentleman.
Like that dude literally sat down and was like, "All right, I got to come up with a socialist. Who do I know? Oh, it's that Russian cunt." Like it just
It's a nice sign too. Like it's not even handwritten. He printed out the letters on like his wife's Cricut or something. They're like nice and like printed sans serif font on this nice big white poster board, and he's wearing a Lacoste t-shirt.
Okay, like motherfucker dropped $120 on his polo.
It's not a polo. I said a Lacoste T-shirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good fun. It's good fun.
But yeah, and he couldn't just like, I mean, I guess what it is to me is like that dear listener is lazy posting, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to, if you're going to go through that effort, you need to do a Google search, or like, you know, because like President Xi is right there for the taking, and you go with like a right wing thug. And anyway, it's fucking lazy people. What I'm saying is, let's be better with our memes.
Yeah, like even if you have a differing opinion than us on politically, which is fine. Even if you change your political opinion like the wind, like some folks, it's all good. Just maybe like back it with some facts and do a little legwork to know what you believe in and know what you're hollering about.
Yeah. Just okay.
Yeah. So anyway, about that.
So anyway, Jacqueline, I guess to wrap this up, we're at about 55 minutes now or so. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, you know, we talked a little bit about it, but I thought just to conclude, I would just kind of ask you, like, why are we doing this, and kind of what do you want to see happen with the podcast, and what's your vision for the future?
Yeah, I think, I think we were excited about podcasting back when we bought the microphones in December because we had recently started listening to several podcasts together. And I know that you also listen to quite a few on your own independently when you're walking and doing all your self-care these days. But I think what I really want to see out of the podcast is, first of all, I mean, selfishly, just kind of a creative outlet for me, something I can do with you that's an engaging, collaborative effort for the two of us. But I think the purpose of the podcast for how we're presenting it to our listeners is that I want to share with them how we fill our life, the things that we enjoy doing and the things that we spend time on with them, maybe give some tips and pointers about some things that we do or have learned, talk about our jobs, and kind of, we have always anecdotal stories about that for sure. But also, you know, just connect with the folks, with the people.
So basically, we're going to talk about things that we like.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that we don't like.
Yeah.
And
I'm one of those people that has a lot more don't likes than actual likes.
Jacqueline's got a lot of hate in her heart.
I'm a little bit of a hater.
And so, yeah, and I think that we're just, there. I guess we've decided it's not a legal podcast, but I'm sure we'll have casts about the law, about court cases. I'm sure we'll have takes on, you know, events in the news or politics.
And we also already have a couple guests lined up. So yeah, we're super excited about that. So you won't just be hearing our voices yelling at you, telling you things, uh-huh, and shouting about things. You will hear from some of our friends, some of our community members that have already contacted us, interested in being guests, and that we've also reached out to.
Uh-huh. We tentatively have a former NFL football player who refuses to talk about being in the NFL, would much rather talk to you about video games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've got some good things.
We have a emergency room nurse from Texas who can give us lots of different perspectives, who's reached out to us, who would like to be on the podcast as well.
Yeah. And so, there is probably some good stuff to come. Probably a lot more dog shit, absolutely awful things to come. Bad takes, terrible opinions. But I don't know. I've had fun doing this. I hope that you've enjoyed it, Jacqueline.
I have, and I think we'll continue to. I hope you will tune in to listen to us pal around here on our Palimony podcast and tell you about what we're up to.
Yeah. So with that, thanks and
happy Arbor Day.
Yeah.